difícil. Van a remember. Remember from the public, the whole, and other. Law advisors, parliamentary and law advisors. Thank you very much. We shall be having a presentation on the National Department of Strategic Plan and the budget. The teacher will be leading us in that. And his team. And thereafter, we have to manage our time. We have to come to the session that we take to amendment bill. This will be the informal meeting about this bill. Allow members to make comments and questions, and then we see how we move from there. So we'll have to ensure that by the time it's 1 o'clock, we'll complete the impact in this one. Starting with the bill or the presentation of the or presentation. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, honorable members. Chairperson, because of the two tasks that we have this morning, we have a bigger presence of the Department of Health, and so we will detain in turn. Crossing the floor from the back and the front as soon as we have we move to the next presentation. I'm going to try and be quick on the National Department of Health Strategic Plan. By way of introduction, I must first apologize to the members of the committee on behalf of the department for the confusion with regards to the tabling of the strategic plan. Our reading of the instruction of the PFMA was suggesting that this should be tabled 10 days before the discussion of the budget vote, and our interpretation was that the budget vote the discussion means that debate, but Parliament has since clarified that 10 days prior to the discussion of the department's budget vote means the discussion by the committee, which in fact in committee, which in fact was not the, and I think there's a general confusion around that clause. So what we did was in order to assist the committee for the discussion, we printed the informal versions that the committee is actually having. The final formal set plan will be distributed within the next 10 days, and it might have some editorial amendments here and there. So our apologies for that. I think it's just a miscommunication between Parliament and the Department on that particular interpretation of the PFMA. Now, with regard to the presentation itself, Chair, I'm not going to take every slide there, but just to say that remind members of our legislative mandates which come from Parliament, and some of the priorities that are actually still being pursued up to 2009, and specifically what our national priorities are for 2007 and 2008, and I'm not going to dwell on that quite much because it will actually be discussed when we discuss the annual report of the department. We just thought we should give highlights for continuity. But we'll actually say more about the organizational structure, the priorities for 2008-2009, and the budget program, which will be led by the CFO. And then we'll have members discussing that issue. Chair, that's our vision. I'm not going to repeat it. And the next slide would be our legislative mandate, some of the legislation that actually guides our work. And I'm not going to focus that much on that. Now, just to remind the honourable members that our strategic plan takes a 5-year trajectory in relation to or in line with the mandate of the current government. So our priorities for 2004 to 2009, our priorities for 2004 to 2009, which are our 5-year priorities, are actually listed there. What we usually call the 10-point plan, which relates to improving governance, promoting healthy lifestyles, in other words, ensuring that there's an emphasis on prevention, contributing towards human dignity by improving the quality of care, the management of communicable and diseases and non-communicable illnesses, strengthening primary health care, EMS and hospital service delivery, the support services, as well as HR, budgeting, and legislation in terms of ensuring that it's implemented, particularly with regard to compliance issues. And of course, our international relations work continues to be at the forefront. So it's within that context that we remind members also of where what our priorities were for the last financial year. And as I said, we're not going to dwell much on the next slide on the summary of the achievements, because we'll come back to that issue when we discuss the annual report. Just a few of these under each program, program one up to program four. So I'm going to skip that share, and I hope the members will be able to refer to the slides that have been distributed. Now I'd like to start on slide 13, because that introduces us to this current financial year, and say that we with the new financial year, which is the 2008-2009 going forward, we have restructured our budget structure, because we have also restructured our department to expand the pool of the senior management in the department. You'll recall here that the department actually currently has three branches, and that is the Strategic Health Program branch, which is actually headed by Mrs. Matao, who is sitting on my left, and then we have the Health Service Delivery branch, which is headed by Dr. Kemi Chetty, and then we have the Human Resources Human Resources and Health branch, which is headed by Dr. Masad. Now, our view and our assessment of the responsibilities of the department have suggested that we need to expand the capacity in the department, and therefore we are moving from those three branches to actually six branches, so that you will see that the budget structure more or less reflects not directly so, but it reflects the six branches that we're actually looking at. The corporate services, we have actually established now a branch which is responsible for corporate services in the department. The strategic health programs branch remains with some splits here and there. The health planning and monitoring, which what we used to call the health service delivery branch, we're changing that to a planning and monitoring branch. And the HR branch remains there. And then we have a branch that is now responsible for special programs and also the management of health entities, so that we are sure that we have a proper oversight over our health entities, such as the MRC, the NHLS, and all those health entities. And of course, we have introduced a new branch which would look at international relations, but also begin to engage with issues of health trade and health product regulation, because health is becoming a huge trade area, particularly for our country. If you look at the issues such as the level of investment in things that relate to trade, you are actually seeing a growth area. And unfortunately, as the health department, we haven't been able to have the capacity to engage at that level. So that's what we are trying to do. And then health product regulation is also a growing area. Eventually, this committee this year, hopefully, will discuss the amendments to the Medicines Control Act, which would be, which we envisage will create a separate agency for health product regulation. The current MCC, which is actually being restructured, but that will be discussed later. So, Chair, that's the restructuring that we've actually done in the department, and we're about to fill the posts of the DDGs that are responsible for all these priorities. Now, what are the priorities for 2008-2009 in terms of our third plan? The issue of strengthening management and communication is still a priority issue, particularly not only in the Department of Health, but across the board, to ensure that the managers actually do manage the institutions that they're responsible for. And we still continue with our program of implementing programs to combat both communicable and non-communicable diseases. And as you see, this relates largely to issues of focus, which is tuberculosis and HIV and AIDS, as well as malaria to some extent. And then on the other side, focusing on issues such as diabetes, hypertension, and other health-related, healthy lifestyle issues. And so that focus, and in particular, lifting up the healthy lifestyle campaign, which in fact we are putting. And then the third focus on the improvement of the management and the service delivery in our public health facilities is a major focus this year, emanating from discussions that have taken place in different platforms. That suggests that this issue is actually paramount in terms of improving service delivery, in particular in those areas that service the poor. So this year we have a focus on about 28 hospitals and clinics that will actually look at those clinics in terms of whether they meet certain standards. So the first part of it will be an assessment of where they are in relation to a set of national standards. And then the second part of that would be the intervention and the turnaround the process in relation to those areas where they are found to be wanting. So that's the health facilities improvement plan. And then the next one relates to improvement of our national health information system. Now, in particular, in this regard, there are two key systems that we look at, and there are reasons for this. If you look at our implementation of the OSD, the occupation-specific dispensation for nurses, one of the problems that we've encountered is that we use figures that we picked up from CERSAS, which projected a certain number of nurses in the system. And we found that, in fact, there are much more there are more nurses in the system than the ones that are reflected in the CERSAS system. But also that the CERSAS system doesn't give you enough information, for example, on issues of qualification, years of experience, etc., etc., which is what we're requiring in order to implement appropriately or properly the occupation specific dispensation. So our human resource information system is actually one area of focus, together with our patient information system, which is already in the process of being implemented. Then there is the issue of health financing, and in this regard, there are two key issues that we are focusing on this year. One is the national health insurance system that we need to actually take forward. And again, in this regard, the committee will consider, and we will distribute at least the informal copy before the actual tabling, the informal copy of the amendment to the medical schemes legislation that we're introducing, so that members can familiarize themselves before the actual tabling of that. And it has been passed by cabinet and will be given to the state law advisors very soon. But we thought it should do no harm to just get the members ahead of time just to peruse what is happening with regard to that, because it relates to some of the steps we are taking towards the implementation of the National Health Insurance System. And then the reduction of the rate of tariff increases in private healthcare sector, or generally, but particularly in the private sector, we're looking at the health cost issue, and I think members are aware of that. And that leads to the reduction in prices of the pharmaceutical products, the medicines, and particularly international benchmarking is one of the issues that we're looking at this year. And the HR, the strengthening of HR provision, you know, a whole range of things, looking at supply side opening and further reopening nursing colleges, looking at the international agreements, et cetera, to strengthen our human resources for health. And then a whole sphere of our operation in relation to international health relations, particularly our work on post-conflict reconstruction, such as work in the DRC, such as work in South Sudan, and all those areas, but also providing our leadership in various fronts and fora in international health relations. One of the key highlights of that for this year, which relates to the discussion we're going to have later, is our hosting of the Conference of Parties somewhere in October this year in Durban, or the Conference of Parties that have actually been working on the FCTC, the Tobacco Control Instrument, international instrument. So that's one of our major conferences that we're holding this year, and we want to make sure that South Africa continues to provide leadership in that area, particularly from a South point of view. So, Chair, those are some of the key priorities that we're focusing on. In fact, you would see that some of them are related to what the President said in the State of the Nation address about the priorities or APEC priorities, particularly with regard to HIV and AIDS and TB and communicable diseases and AIDS lifestyle. That's actually implementing what the President has actually pronounced on. Now, the apart from those, which are broad and are systemic, by the way, I would like to actually emphasize that although these are our strategic priorities for 2008 as a Department of Health, they are also priorities for the system, the health system, because we provide coherence and leadership in that regard. Now, each of those programs, in terms of the program or budget structure, we have actually provided that because we're also discussing the budget here to look at what priorities are related to the budget structure, so that the members can actually scrutinize that. For example, in terms of administration, we would be looking at strengthening planning within the national health system at all levels and improving monitoring and reporting. Now, in this regard, members will be aware that there are all sorts of discussions and, in fact, some challenges in various provinces about our service delivery platforms that we are actually asking provinces to come up with, and that's the major instrument of planning the system that we are pushing forward in that regard. But also the improvement of monitoring and reporting. We have just introduced the Office of Standards. We've now established it, and it will actually be leading the work on the national on the facilities plan, but also other work that relates to monitoring and reporting. We're also focusing on implementing our turnaround strategy, continuing to implement it around the audit outcomes. The members are aware that that discussion was started in the committee but wasn't finished in relation to the report of the Auditor General, which also qualifies us for various reasons. So we're looking at focusing on that to ensure that on those issues that the Auditor General qualified us on, we would not have a qualification again. And then the improvement of efficiency and effectiveness of our procurement processes is what we want to focus on. Performance management, which is also what the President talked about. And of course, finally, the policy for fast-tracking the filling of these vacant posts, which is one of the areas of agreement, of the agreement that was reached with Labour, which suggested that this matter should be prioritized. In the second program, strategic health programs, we are looking at immunization coverage, which is improving. And in this regard, we have reported in this committee that we as a country were declared polio-free, but we want to ensure that we maintain that and improve those districts that were actually still below 80. And we would want to ensure that we train 3,600 health professionals in TB management and control, because as I said, TB is one of our focus areas. We're also reducing TB default rate from 10% now to 7%. In fact, in the set plan for TB, which we discussed in this committee, we indicated that our default rate was very high. I think it was more than 19%. Now we've actually reduced it to 7%, and we're moving it further down to 7%. In fact, we would want to ensure that we maintain it between below 10% for the next coming year, because that would actually impact on issues such as MDR and SDR-TB. We also continue to want to maintain the 10% reduction in malaria deaths annually. We've already reached our targets in this regard, but we must also maintain so that we don't have any kind of regression in that regard. We would want to continue the implementation of the National Strategic Plan for HIV and AIDS 2007 to 2011, and all those targets that are given there, including our TB Strategic Plan, the two of them more or less going together but also separately. Vitamin A supplementation to eligible women and children using the public health sector. And then we are finalizing, at least in relation to African traditional medicine, even though we're not going to be able to introduce the legislation this year, but we are already in the final stages of the discussion of the policy document, which we will release for discussion for public discourse in the issue, and we'll brief the committee at the relevant time. In fact, we already have a final report from the presidential task team on the policy side, which we are working with them to polish up so that it can actually be published, at least hopefully by next month, for public comment. And then with regard to the third program, the health planning and monitoring, Chair, we are focusing, as I suggested, on 28 hospitals and 4 community health centers. We have 32 health facilities, and I must explain here that we've not only selected, we've selected facilities that are actually, in our view, having challenges of performance and service delivery, as well as facilities that we believe are actually performing optimally, so that we can be able to cross transfer and look at lessons. And what we will do with them is to implement an instrument that we have actually established, which is to look at certain areas of performance in relation to these facilities and see where they are. So that is actually happening with our facilities improvement plan. And we are improving the data capturing and the quality of healthcare information, again related to the priority of the health information system. And this year we are conducting our 2008 South African demographic health survey, which we do every 2 to 3 years, and this is happening now. The last one was in 2005, in fact, and 2003. Is it 3 to 5 years? Yeah, 2003. And then we are also doing our national HIV and syphilis survey. The national health insurance proposals and draft legislation, we're going to ensure that we finish that this year. And we will produce the final report on the national burden of disease study, which will help generate a comprehensive picture of disease patterns in our country. That is going to come out this year, part of our planning exercises. The reduction in medicine prices through benchmarking with other countries, this is international benchmarking I referred to, and of course the restructuring of the Medicines Control Council I've already alluded to, in terms of suggesting that this committee will consider hopefully draft legislation in that regard. On the HR Fund Program 4, we are this year moving, extending our occupation-specific dispensation to medical doctors, dentists, emergency medical services personnel, and pharmacists. And work has already started in that regard in relation to discussions internally, proposals, preparing for the negotiations of labor on that front. The National Human Resource Information System I've already alluded to. And the program of clinical associates, which we introduced in this committee a while ago, has already begun at the Walter Sisulu University, and we're going to ensure that Pretoria University and VET start the program at just one of them by June, and the other one, I think, or both of them by June, if possible. So we're focusing on that program to ensure that we develop clinical associates. And of course the production of human resource plans by provinces is very, very important. This committee passed the legislation on the Traditional Health Practitioners Bill, which is now an act, and we are preparing for the implementation, that is the establishment of the council and the processes that lead to the establishment of the registry, in that regard. And of course we're going to have to ensure that we have established new boards in all our areas that relate to HR. The HPCSA requires new members, the South African Nation Council, because of the law that was passed by this committee and Parliament, and the Dental Technicians Council. Now, the last but one program relates to the health entity management. And of course, here we also have captured the work in relation to our hospital revitalization program, because it's been put from a budget point of view under this budget program. So we're completing our 3 new hospitals in Limpopo and Buckley West in the Northern Cape. And we are finalizing 9 more hospitals in the hospital revitalization program. In other words, they'll be kicking off this year. And of course, we are also establishing our health information officers in 286 hospitals. And of course, this year, we will invite the committee to a conference which we are holding, I think it's in April, okay? 10-11th of April, which is our celebration of the 30 years of primary health care since the signing of the Alma-Ata Declaration in 1978. There is an international one taking place very soon, so we would want to have ours just before then. And then we are finalizing our audit of the PhD services and infrastructure. Just like we have an audit in government of our schools, which has been updated, we also started and initiated a sense of what the state of our PhD are, and therefore we finalize that and improve supervision. In fact, the levels of supervision in our PhD facilities are very, very low, and so we would want to ensure that we improve that, because that's actually going to improve our quality of care. On the international front, just some of the highlights will relate to a whole range of multilateral activities, as I said, that are taking place here, such as the CODEX, which is a committee that relates to food regulation and food safety regulation. We also have an international conference of the Red Cross taking place in South Africa. And I've alluded to the key one, which also relates to the work that we are doing in the legislation that we're going to discuss now, which is in line with the SPTC, the Conference of Parties on Tobacco, which will be tobacco control, which will be taking place in Durban somewhere in October. We will have alluded to the post-conflict reconstruction processes in the DRC, in Burundi, and in the Sudan. But we also have other activities. For example, right now we are in the process of sending a team to the borders of Namibia and Angola, where there have been floods, and we have had requests from the government of Namibia to come and assist in terms of managing health-related matters in that area, together with the Mozambicans. And now suddenly in Mozambique we also have that cyclone, and we were getting a Mozambican team to go with us to Namibia, but we also have now to go to Mozambique together with Zimbabwe, because in the border of Mozambique and Zimbabwe there is a cholera outbreak, and we are getting our team in those three places. So there's a whole range of other things that are happening in that regard. We also, this year, are going to be taking over the chair of SADC, and therefore we will take responsibility for some of the SADC program on health. We are currently chairing the AU Ministers of Health, the Bureau, and therefore we have responsibilities in that regard, which we are fulfilling. We also enhanced the program to implement three priority areas of the African Health Strategy. As I said, that's in line with our responsibility as chair of the AU. For example, the focus on combating childhood illnesses and promoting safe motherhood. We have a conference very soon that is an AU conference hosted by ourselves, which is looking at the instruments for ensuring that we can monitor this particular area, because it's a very key MDG for Africa. The traditional medicines matter, I've referred to, and the implementation of the electronic system for the registration of clinical trials, I've also referred to in relation to the issues of healthcare. As I said, it's a growing industry in the country, and therefore we are strengthening our capacity to regulate, to monitor, and to engage when necessary to invite in the investment. Sure, that's what the money is buying, and more. It's also buying us. So that's where we are. But through you, Chair, may I ask then the CFO to then tell you what money is buying all this in terms of the proposed budget for 2008-2009. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Chair, honourable members, if we look at slide number 23, which starts the presentation on the budget side of the department, during our bidding process in June 2007, We put forward several bids, and we were successful with four of those. The first one is the additional funding that was granted for hospital revitalization, and that was $600 million for this coming 2008-09, following the $500 million and then $900 million. This is to take care of the cost escalations in the first year, and then also to allow additional projects to be added into the program. The next chunk of money that we received is $350 million, $601.2 billion for the comprehensive HIV/AIDS grant. This is basically to fund the comprehensive plan and the further development of that particular plan. The National Tertiary Services, those are the services provided at our big academic hospitals and of the tertiary nature. These are being, the budgets are being strengthened at $193 million, $248 million, and $640 million. Honourable members will notice that the in each case the funding for the first year is relatively low, but then it balloons out in the outer years. And it hangs around the fiscal structures and the fiscal priorities as detailed by the Minister of Finance in his budget speech. We also received $10 million to recapitalize the nursing colleges, and this will go largely to draw a plan for each individual college for the refurbishment and also the revitalization of those particular facilities. I'm not going to dwell much on slide 27 because this is the new budget structure which the DG alluded to. We had four programs, and we now reduce that, or we're increasing to six, and it's going to reduce the span of management, and it's going to give us better monitoring and control. If we then look at program one, which is administration, and that's a document that this is, and please, members, we've copied the slides into a big sheet so that the eyes that are now not perhaps so good anymore, like my own, can read these. So if we look at slide number 28, which says 10 budget, program one is the administration, and this is specified by Treasury. Of interest here is maybe just to orientate you, the program is mentioned at the top, administration, and then the sub-programs on the left-hand side. It then gives us the actual expenditures for 2004-05, 2005-06, 2006-07, and then the budget for 2007-08. This is the year which we're operating right now, and then the budget for next year, and then the estimated the NPF in the outer years. And then on the far right-hand side, we have a column which gives us the average growth over this particular time series. This gives us a clear indication of how the budget is growing over the period that we're looking at. Now, in this particular instance, if members should look at management, which grows at 20.4%, that alludes to and ties back to the improvement of the management and the more funding being provided for management, growing from the four programs to the six programs. If we then turn the page to the next slide, this is program two, strategic health program. Here we see on the far right hand side that HIV and AIDS is growing by 26.47%. This is mainly due to the high growth that comes into the conditional grant which funds the national strategic plan. Communicable diseases shows a decrease of 4.9%, but that's just because of the very high figure in 2004-05, which was a once-off budget allocation in that particular year. Honourable members will see after that it grows from $4 million to $9 million, which is a nice growth. In fact, it doubles over that particular period. The TB plan is, or TB budget is growing by 13%, and that reflects the priority that we're giving to this. And please, honourable members must realise that the TB funds in the national department is not the total picture. Every province has its own budget for TB. This is just the national department side which looks towards monitoring and controlling and setting standards. non-communicable diseases, the budget grows by 18%, and that's largely because of the pathology services grant that was included in this time series. If we look at program 3, which is health planning and monitoring, the health economics unit budget grows by 13.19, and that goes together with the efforts of the department around national health insurance and also the control and monitoring of the private sector. The budget for the Office of Health of office compliance, which is 11%, this is fairly low, and this is because it's a very new unit which needs to grow over the next number of years. The program 4 shows for human resources policy and planning and also human relations and HR development rather large growth figures. But this is just because it starts off from such a low base. The 8 million, which is the budget at the in 2010-11, is not sort of all that dramatic, but it starts off from 26, which gives us particularly high percentage increase. Likewise for the labor relations. The HR development and management grows by only 4.5%, but that's overshadowed by the health professional training grant, which forms part of this grant. And if we strip that out, that particular budget line still grows by 22%. If we look at the program 5, which is now one of our new programs, we see that district health services is growing at 22%, and that's largely because that particular function has been funded in the initial stages of around 2004-05 and the following years by donor money. So we're now replacing donor money to make this particular unit less less dependent on donor funding. Hospital services grows by 13%, and that's reflected by the fact that we have the hospital revitalization grant in that. If we then look at program 6, multilateral relations, north-south and south-south, grows by 10.56%. This is something that we'll have to watch because the rand dollar exchange rate, which we used at the time of the budget, is definitely not in the range where the rand dollar is right now. So, but that's something that we need to carefully control. The rest of that particular program grows by 7.6%. The department in total, right at the bottom, grows at 14.36%. Now, if we turn the page, just to give members some sort of an idea of what happens in the conditional grant, because we are largely a post box for the money to flow through to the provinces. The tertiary services grant grows by 9%. The hospital revitalization grows by 30% over the cycle, and it's interesting to note that the tertiary services grant will end up at 2010-11 at 7.3 billion, hospital revitalization at 3.6 billion. Health professional training is growing slow at 4.48, and this grant is due for a review this particular year coming up. The HIV and AIDS grant is growing by 32%, and then the forensic pathology services grows by 25%. This particular grant will be phased out and will fall back into the equitable share in the future. The HIV and AIDS unit within the department, if we strip out the conditional grant, grows by 6.5%. And the HR section, which is if we again strip out the health professional training, grows by 22%. I think that's the end of my specific part of this, except for the last slide, which is yours.
So then, in conclusion, just to say that the strategic plan of the department has deliberately been linked to the President's State of the Nation address within the context of the business as usual approach, there are certain things that are really business as usual, and we as usual are actually working round the clock to ensure that we implement this priority. And of course there are critical challenges that come from 2007-2008, which I didn't refer to, which are actually in this slide, which we are still assessing for 2008-2009. Chair, that's what the money will be buying. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, allow yourself to ask questions. Comment.
Thank you very much. Maybe one needs to start by appreciating the manner in which the budget has been presented before us with an information that is brought to the screen. And lastly, DG has already made mention that this is actually the money which is going to buy not even almost everything in the Department of Health, because one needs to acknowledge the fact that there are challenges somewhere. Now, I just wanted to know, especially on that last part of DG's comment, that that the department anticipates unforeseeable and unavoidable expenditure in relation to program one, to program three, because I should think that that is where many challenges are. If there are any unforeseeable and unavoidable expenditure, maybe the committee can be briefed around that. And if yes, again, how will this be avoided for this year? Thank you, Chair. Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. Mine is on the appointment and training of data capturers. Last year, I think when this briefing was presented to us, the data capturer was at around 2,000, just a little over 2,000. I just want to find out as to whether this figure, the 1,110, is a new figure, or is it also including those who were earmarked for last year, and how many were placed?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, my questions revolve around the human resources capacity in the in the hospitals in particular. I mean, we can have as many revitalization programs and, you know, improvements in quality, but you're not going to attain that if you don't have the slot. Now, I was concerned when the DG mentioned that the personal system didn't pick up all the nurses. I mean, I don't know how that happens. I've served on the public service and administration committee myself. Any public servant's supposed to be on the personal system. So, I mean, and so how did that happen? If you could please unpack that and explain to us. And if you could also let us know what are the vacancy rates that we're looking at for nurses and doctors in this country? Because I see on slide 11 you talk about bringing Cuban and Iranian and Tunisian doctors into the country. But it is, I mean, while it does help in some degree, it is a bit of the answer. It's not solving the problem. It's not creating our own human resources where people will stay there. And I mean, there was even talk, you know, the human rights were violated anyway, the fact that we went to last stage, they had to send half their money back to Cuba. I mean, you know, and they had to go back home. They weren't allowed to marry any South Africans and settle down. So I want to know if, from you, as far as the nursing colleges are concerned, how many more positions do that create? Because we're sitting at a predicament where I think 60% of nurses are 55 or older in the public service. So in the next 5 to 10 years, you're going to be losing 60% for current nurses anyway. So while you are creating more posts or creating more availability for students, all you're doing is actually filling up the, if you can, the people that are retiring. So, what is wrong? As far as I can see, we're in a crisis as far as human resources are concerned in health. So, what a plan that you put on the table to really increase the number of student nurses and doctors in the country? And I mentioned the other week when you were at our community, DG, through YouTube, that, you know, why don't you bring the private sector in to train doctors and more so for the nurses? There seems to be a block there, and I don't understand why. We need to work together to improve the human resource and capacity of the department. Thank you very much, Chief.
Thank you.
Chair and honourable members. On the unforeseeable and unavoidable expenditure, I would say that at this stage we would not be able to actually predict and quantify. It's always possible that there's expenditure that is actually unavoidable. But when we sit here, we wouldn't be able to then say that we're gonna have an avoidable expenditure. We plan for it, but we would want to avoid such expenditure, and therefore it would be difficult for us to say in certain terms that from program one to program three we'll have an avoidable expenditure. For example, in the previous year we had an outbreak of SBRTB. We had to reconstruct some hospitals very quickly in order to accommodate the kind of infection control necessary for that. We wouldn't have been able to predict that would happen. So that becomes unavoidable because we can't leave hospitals with that kind of infection control and mechanisms which are not suitable. Otherwise we'll spread disease. So that was unforeseen and unavoidable. So in just to illustrate, therefore, we wouldn't have been able to predict that would happen. But there's always that kind of possibility, and the only way we can all prepare for it is when it happens, then we begin to say, what do we do about it? So in that regard, honourable members, I would think that there's always that possibility. If we would know now, then we should be putting it in the budget and planning for it. But we haven't done that. Now, with regard to the questions around human resources in general, because there are a whole range of issues. Yeah, I think in the last meeting we did allude to this matter that perhaps we do need another focused discussion on the challenges of human resources in South Africa and in Southern Africa and in the world for that matter. But let me pick up on some of the issues here. First of all, it's not necessarily true that if we train our doctors here, we'll train them because they'll stay here. Actually, we train enough doctors in South Africa, but we are training them for export. And if we were to train our doctors and they would all remain here, we would not have the problems that we have. That's the first thing we must actually establish, particularly for doctors. So we don't have a problem of training of doctors in the country. We have a problem of the fact that we are training for export. In many cases, because when we have the community service doctors, when we train them and we introduce community service, that has actually addressed the problem. Not completely, but it has. But what happens is as soon as they qualify, they take their bags and go. And one of the things that we need to deal with in that regard is that the country is spending money to train doctors for other countries. And therefore, we cannot avoid discussing with those countries how they compensate us for actually training doctors for them, so that we can be able then to sustain our own training processes in the country. That's the one thing. Which is why, for example, we've come from a Kampala conference, international conference on HR, which has actually looked at these issues. And we are also going to Geneva next week on Monday and Tuesday, continuing with this debate about global human resource development, because the developing world is actually having a challenge of training personnel for the developed world. And that's general. It's not a South African phenomenon. It's a general phenomenon, and we are very much at the center in South Africa of those debates around how we actually deal with these things. That's the first thing I would want to say. The second one relating to the increases that we are actually talking about in the nursing colleges, we did indicate that we would be, once the figures have been settled in relation to the intake this year in the nursing colleges, we would be able to then provide these. But we gave an illustration in the last meeting that in case that there's doubled, for example, or tripled the number of nurses that they were training, from an output, I think, of about 500 to 3,000, which actually is much more than what they need, which is what we are encouraging, that we must actually train slightly more. And our strategy is to increase so that we don't really discourage people from moving outside to get jobs, but we also ensure that we have enough. But it's not only an output issue, a supply issue. It's also an issue of retention of those nurses. And what we are seeing now is the reversal of the challenges we've had before. As a result of our introduction of the OSD, the occupation-specific dispensation, and it's early stages to talk about what the impact is. But if already the private sector has, although we don't agree with them, but if already they are arguing that because we have increased salaries in for our nurses, they are threatened, and therefore they have increased their fees in order to ensure that they retain their nurses, then it means we are actually on the right track, because we are beginning to compete with them. All we don't agree with is for them to then simply increase the salaries of nurses by increasing the cost of healthcare. That we don't agree with. But the very fact that that's what is happening suggests that we are actually beginning to address this challenge. Even with the averaging up of the... Let's put it this way. It's also not a complete picture to suggest that the average of our nurses is actually old and aging. Many of our nurses are actually overseas, young and energetic, and in Saudi Arabia, in London, and everywhere else. That's why I was saying the personal system that we're talking about did not capture all the information that we require for the implementation of OSD, because OSD was not just about health. It was about what is the level of experience, what is the level of training, and what are the qualifications that those nurses have. Now, unfortunately, PESTOL doesn't do that, because it's not, in that sense, a complete HR system. That's what we've discovered. But even in terms of numbers, by the way, you see the PESTOL system actually captures people. And it would have all the people there, but just like we were talking about the vacancies that we had last time, where some of them were just as a result of the fact that people haven't deleted certain things in the system. The system, when it gives you certain figures, gives you figures of the numbers that you've got, but because the status is different, some of them are temporary and some are moving in and out, you never get to a point where you'll have at least the exact numbers physically versus the numbers that are there. There's always a fluctuating figure. But my focus in particular was on the quality of the information in relation to OSD. That you couldn't, for example, say, this nurse who's working in this hospital has these other qualifications which you are supposed to pay for when you then consider OSD. Now, with regard to the vacancy rate, honorable members will appreciate that these figures we don't keep in our fingertips. So when we get such a question, we would have to then respond later on in writing to say these are our vacancy rates in the system. But also particularly because it's related to this challenge which we are trying to clear, that vacancy rates in South Africa have been counted for some time, and I think the Minister of Public Service has actually talked about this in more detail. They have encountered for some time as relating to what people think they require. So if they put an organogram which requires 100% and they say 40%, then they say there's a vacancy rate of 50%. That's the general trend in the public service, which of course is not a correct thing, because a vacancy would have to be related to a funded post, not a desirable post. And so that is the challenge that we have. When we say vacancy rate, people will tell you that in this world, we require 10 more nurses, and then they call that a vacancy. Now, that would have to be resolved. You know, we'd have to know whether we're talking about, if we were to have the ideal nurse ratio and nurse patient ratio, what numbers would we be looking at, as opposed to what are the vacancies now? Because those are two different pictures or figures. Now, that's what we're trying to clean up in the system. And we'll be able to then provide those figures once we clean it up. So I'm tempted to comment on this thing. On this Cuban violation of human rights, I'm not sure if there is any, in our view, in our agreement with the Cubans, there was anybody's violation of anybody's human rights. The Cubans, like any other country, will put preconditions about how their people who come through their formal program will actually, through a bilateral agreement with our country, will come to this country. And if those people violate those, they are violating a bilateral agreement. If they violate them because of their views about Cuba, that's okay. They have a right to do so. But that doesn't actually mean that the agreement that is there, which they agreed to in terms of the conditions of them coming here, is actually a violation of their human rights. If that was the case, then we wouldn't have the many Cubans, including the ones of engineers, who have come here again on the same terms, and then there are also other people who are actually from Cuba who are working all over the world, by the way, and not only here. So I'm not sure about the violation of human rights. It's a perspective of those people who actually have opted out of the program, which are a minority compared to the majority that are committed to their country, and they know why the country does what they are doing. Just like we would want our own people who go through all these other countries to be committed to South Africa, not only on the other. So I thought I should actually comment, because I don't think it has anything to do with our agreement with Cuba. It has something to do with the individual. Honourable Madam Minister, I'm going to have to ask my colleagues to respond to this. I think Jochen will be able to deal with that, because I'm also not sure what the difference is in the figures are. But Jochen, do you want to comment on that?
Yes, thank you. Honorable Chair, members. We had put a figure of 1,000, but this will increase over the period to 3,000. So if you look at the current figures, it's just 3,000, 1,000 each year. So last year was spent largely on trying to figure out what the unit standards are registering the course, and that took much longer than we anticipated. So the idea is that once these people are trained, they will be then absorbed into the system rather than and having a career path. So that process took much longer than anticipated. We did hire 72 data capturers, specifically for the TV program, and they started, they were employed in January this year, and they were deployed in the field in February. The 1st of February this year. So the 1,000 that we will be hiring this year and each year for the next 3 years should come on stream on the 1st of April. We are currently seeking visits to look at training these people now that we've got the unit standards in place. So it's been a bit slower than we anticipated, but now that we have the unit standards in place, course registered, I think we can go full speed ahead. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Other questions from one of the members? You know, objecting here to the end of life here. Maybe let's start with 5.2, slide 9.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, I thought you were talking about slide 9, national strategy plan for TB developed and disseminated. That's a very high statement. Summary of achievements in 2007-2008. National strategy plan for TB developed and disseminated. What are that? You're talking to us to tell us about your shit. But they're telling us nothing. I'm not sure if I'm my point. They're taking a picture of it, nothing yet. As you know, that you're saying nothing about MDR, you're saying nothing about FDR. You know that given the challenges that we're facing, that half facing us now, we understand that I think it was in one province where they were keeping their hands and living in Japan, the hands for people who escaped from hospital. Running away around the country, and this is nothing. And I'm sure if you, I think the expenditure of national, the estimate rather of national expenditure, giving outline a number of areas where this particular challenge of people are extreme, but the department is not able to take us forward to say in future. Where we are moving around. And I think they outline one of the things we put in case. Actually, in the specific area, the country is much more than just a second. And I'm saying that you may need to comment there. Last, this one on the 33 hospitals were under construction at your site. And 32 officials are under construction, 11 in the phase, in the planning phase as part of the hospital revitalization program. Last year, I think we were given how many officials under construction. Last year we were given, just want to get my note here. You are saying 32 hospitals were under construction and 11 in the planning phase as part of the hospital and revitalization project. Slide 20 says accept an additional 9 hospitals into the hospital and revitalization project. I'm not sure what that means. In one of them, for Bodo, 22 hospitals will be under construction. And then they need the planning phase is 920. You must accept 9 additional hospitals into this particular one. The expenditure of national estimates rather of national expenditure. 8 new hospitals have been constructed, 3 more with official opened, and then they actually say these are the hospitals that must be attracted. They say 33 hospitals were under construction, 11 more in the planning phase. So maybe you can actually again say we must be able to understand exactly what's happening in terms of these things. Well, for me, I want a situation where I can track progress. You are telling progress, but I'm not able to track progress around this particular thing, and I be convinced. As far as how we are moving around this particular issue. The community service for nurses implemented as from January 2008. Last year you were saying they will be implemented as of 2007 community service. That's what I was presented last year. implement community service for nurses from July 2007. That's what you said last year. Now it must be implemented for 2008, January. You're not telling us why. Why in July 2007 we said this thing must be implemented and now we're going to implement? What has been the problem? And we know also a number of problems in terms of actually addressing a number of issues in the press. If I'm not mistaken, one or two members of the parliament team have questions to the minister, or questions to the pipeline around this particular issue. You actually see around this particular thing. Even there, you would actually find that we must finalize the new remuneration framework for health workers in collaboration with the department of health service. Occupation specific dispensation for all categories was agreed with all these departments signed into collective agreement in 2007. It is now applicable to 100,000 nurses, etc. And it is who will need a specific recognition. We've been approached by a number of people that say there are problems around the situation. And I can raise, I don't want to take, unfortunately, the policy that I have to bring this there. I can raise a number of other issues that one is actually beginning to address around this. For instance, after that, the implementation of the MS National Strategic Plan, you are not telling us what are the challenges, but in almost all the presentation, even in the specific presentation of the NFC, we were told part of the profit that is going to confront our business is the incongruence between the plan and the budget. And that's as far as the current budget that are actually presented here. And again, even Mr. Muller is not telling us anything about that. That this plan, it was said the budget is not going to be able to be implemented. But the department is coming to present the parliament and telling us nothing about it. And I can go on and on and on and on. Maybe if I have time, but as I say, that follows my disadvantage of being the chair. Talk less and listen more. But this is a serious question. As I say, I can't break progress. And I can go on and on and on and almost all the things that I'm thinking. Look into what you said to us here in March last year and what you're saying to us here in March this year. Two different things.
No, thank you. Thank you very much, sir. Thanks for the second tip. But it says something about the structure of our presentation. It says we should start by having an annual report discussion, because what you are referring to are issues of the annual report. What we just listed for purposes of just allowing members, we weren't really getting deep into those issues. Because that actually must be covered by the annual report of 2007-2008. Our brief for this, that's why I even skipped those slides, because I didn't really think that it was actually our brief this year to really reflect on what has happened in
2007-2008. No. I'm saying
this is
just, you are giving a narrative to us.
Yeah, but Chair, if I may, just to give you an example, Chair.
So that if you are telling us about national traffic density development and the 33 and then all the other things, you are giving us the strategic plan and the budget. That is, there must be some cross-referencing. You did some of this in the very same presentation, in the way we are presenting it. You were able to outline some of them in the way we have to present it. So I'm not saying something provincial service transformation plan instead of a province. And then I think there was a comment you made about that. There's another one. So I'm saying that I'm just taking through from some of the things that you do yourself or actually presenting. National health insurance this thing that now appears to be coming. That's what you're saying, something you said last year, but you're mentioning now, but you are now saying the thing is going to come. Can you see the point I'm making? I can go from what you're saying.
No, Che, what I'm trying to say, I agree with you, Che, but if I take just one example of the National Strategic Plan for TB developed and disseminated, and I refer to this year, we're going to be focusing on the reduction of the default rate and so on. Now, in between those two statements, there are a whole range of things that have been challenges and that have been that are continuing to be challenges in relation, for example, to what we've been doing with that national strategic plan. So what I'm suggesting here is I take your point. Maybe we should actually be tracing each one of these in relation to where it was before and where we are taking it to. But then that would actually mean, say, for example, if you take the OSD and the many challenges that are there in OSD, I can take a presentation just on that alone. Similarly, I can take a presentation just on the National Strategic City Plan alone. Each one of these issues, I can actually spend the whole portfolio committee meeting just on them. So it's a challenge of how to balance and, you know, the discussion with information that is supposed to fit in within the time frame that we've got. But I would hope that the committee, having the budget in front, and then having some of the strategic plans, would then say, like the chair suggested, let's take the OSD one and just deeply, so that we can be able to explain the anomalies between the figures, because they are not major. For example, chair, I think if you take the figures on the hospital, the revitalization, we can explain them by going back to the figures that we presented last time, saying what it means to add 9 hospitals to the list, and saying what it means to approve business plans, because we did talk about that before. The difference between starting the hospitals because they've got the money, and including others in the hospital revitalization, not necessarily as projects that will start this year, but as approved business plans and so on. So we could be able to do that in a further presentation. Even with regard to the NSP chair, the one issue on community service for nurses that the chair refers to, for example, I mean, we would have said, because the president had not promulgated the act, we couldn't start in July. It's just a question of the legal instrument, which only came into effect, I think, somewhere in September this year. So that's why we're only starting in January. But those are things that, yes, I agree, Chair. There might have been a need for further cross-referencing, which we will try and do in future. But also it might actually require that, because we are signaling areas, when we do the annual report, we will have to say, look, in the budget this year you've got this, how is it covered because of A, B, and C? So perhaps the sooner we also do the annual report and not do it towards the end of January, I think, like we did November, I think that we did last time. If we can have it earlier, we'll be able to cross-reference that way and be able to monitor correctly. So I take your point, sir.
Has a lot of information in it, which I thought needed to be unpacked, because you also mentioned 16 disease plans, and going back down under, he mentioned that 3 hospitals, you know, both Champagne and Basuel, will be finished by March 2008 or going into 2009. The beginning of 2008 and 2009, but on page 28, they say they'll be finished by the end of March 2000, and on page 24, they say they'll be finished by March 2009, and it's a little bit of confusion. because it leads us to roll over if they do 15 and 15 and 15 into the other year. Have they considered those rollover? Because it seems that then hospital online quick makes us not understand whether the 33 hospitals were under improvement, were part of hospital management. It's so packed up that it definitely needs to be unpacked. And it gives us concern about rollover and how much was added and cost. So that all these hospitals that are missed and missed. And the second thing is already coming along. And the national hospitals, six national hospitals, are online and each one are already going to be open very soon and starting and all. And then I'll stop there because they mentioned health entities and unfortunately nothing was said about health entities here anytime. That's the same concerning the presentation of today.
I would just like to make a comment. It is not a violation of one's human rights if you preclude it from falling in love and getting married. Because that's exactly what happens to those Cuban doctors. They are bound by a contract. When they come to this country, if they do so happen to fall in love, they cannot get married because that's what the contract says. And it is my considered opinion that that is a violation of human rights according to the constitution we adhere to. I'd like to refer to slide 12. Okay, and ask the challenges, under the challenges, is it possible for the DG to possibly tell us what was the cost to the Department of Health in terms of the strike? What did it cost you? The public sector strike and the nurses rate on strike, what was the cost and you know, how did you cope with that in your practice? You refer under challenges towards the Millennium Development Goals. It's slower than anticipated, but I don't hear what is in place. We debated the other day in the ICU debate around the NDGs and child mortality under 5, on the increase rather than decrease. And what was the department's view on that? Also, in the challenges, in the same slide, you refer to the impact of the two-year medical internship program. I didn't quite get what the impact was, if you would please tell us what's the impact. I'd like to also know, what is the rollover in terms of your budget? And if there is a rollover, what is the plan for it, or why is there a rollover? In slide 16, you say that you want to train 3,600 health professionals in TB management and control. How did you arrive at that figure? What was your analysis? Where are you going to place them? How are you going to identify them and place and train them? And then on the whole TB, the SDR problem, do you have a track and trace system in place? Because it's my understanding that about 30 patients in one of these hospitals could not be traced. And they went out into the community and obviously it's a problem. Here, I have a couple more questions. May I go on? Okay, on slide 17, you refer to providing 500,000 eligible people. And it doesn't make sense as a sentence. Living debilitating conditions with nutritional supplements. It just doesn't make good grammar in the first place. Who are these 500,000 people? How did you identify them? How are you going to access them and, you know, to get your nutritional supplements? And then on slide 18, you refer to conducting the 2007 National HIV and Syphilis Survey. 2007 is behind us. So I'm not understanding how you're still going to conduct that. I'll stop here, okay? Oh, I have one more question. sorry. I have one more on slide 26. You talk about 10 million rand to earmark. The sentence says 10 million rand has been earmarked to formulate a detailed plan to recapitalize the nursing colleges. And is all that money going to be only to formulate a plan, or is it actually going to be to do something as well? Sounds like a hell of a lot of money. I'd like to be the architect there to do that.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'm tempted again to ask a question around rollover, because in terms of the adjusted estimates of national expenditure for 2007, there's been a rollover of 385 million. So I just wanted to check with the department as to whether the department is going to spend other monies correctly. Because if I can quote a program one of the department, it says 400 and something million was rolled over for upgrading the Johannesburg Chemistry Laboratory electrical infrastructure. Now I just want to know as to whether the department is going, for instance, I understand that if the department fails to spend the money accordingly, treasury will be on your neck. Therefore, you find a way on how to spend that money accordingly. Now, when you look into what has happened in the adjustment, for instance, in program 2, 400 and something million has been rolled over, 9 million has been rolled over, 121 million has been rolled over. When you go to program 3, of health service delivery, 200 and something million has been rolled over. I don't want to know whether there has been a fundamental problem around spending and what it is. And Chairperson, again, I just want to know, because I should think by now we could have been told as to whether NHI is at a later stage or it has been finalized. Because, for instance, this matter, it's a matter of 1997, it has been carried out all along. And the understanding of NHI, for instance, it must assist, according to my understanding, the poor in this country to have an access to those health facilities that many of them don't have access. Now, I just want to know, at what stage is this NHI? And again, we've been told sometime last year that there is a risk equalization fund. Now, I just want to know, or to be briefed from the department, as to whether risk equalization fund will actually, the NHI will actually be represented by risk equalization fund. And lastly, Chair, is again on MCC. For instance, I just want to know, if we keep on budgeting for MCC, because the understanding here is you go and hold meetings, boardroom meetings and whatever, but we don't arrive at a final stage of restructuring the MCC. Where are we? If there are, again, fundamental flaws, maybe we can be briefed around the matter. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, PC. May I request that we let's not be diverted around this particular question on the Chubut doctors, whatever we want to call it, if you allow, because we don't know what is the contrast between the Chubut government and the South African government with regard to this particular issue. You might find if you go from just keeping the operations anywhere, and as a soldier, I mean, get involved in love, but there are certain situations that I'm a soldier, there are certain things that are there. If I want to get married, I'll have to find another title. So there are a lot of people that come to the government and all those things. Let's not perhaps
same document
contract.
Conclude the same thing in some of the consolidation positions which inform a particular planning about analyze the particular situation.
No, thanks for putting on record that we are not stopping people from falling in love. They can, but there's a procedure for how to do it. Thank you very much. Let me attempt to answer some of these questions, and then I'll ask the CFO to deal with some of the rollover issues, and my colleagues to deal with others. If I take, for example, the issue of the MDC, we say there that the challenge that we'll face in 2007 and we're still going to face is the issue of impacting on these perhaps lower than has been envisaged, and that's because of a whole range of issues that that we have actually alluded to in this meeting before. And we have said, for example, to this committee that as a country, we, in many cases in regards to the MDGs, were far ahead of some of those MDGs, even as they were adopted. And then we decided to actually put our own targets so that we could actually pursue those. And so there are those that we have already fulfilled. It shouldn't be a generalization that the MDGs are slower. The specific ones where we have challenges relate to issues of HIV and AIDS and issues of maternal and child care. And the challenges that we refer to here relate to a whole range of systemic challenges. For example, because of the counting problem, let's start there, and we did say last week, I referred to this letter, that we have a problem in that we are using different sources of information about how to measure where we are. And we don't know, therefore, because in relation to some set of indicators, using different data, we say we've actually reduced maternal and child care. If you go to another source, they'll tell you that South Africa has increased maternal and child care. Now, as a country, we have to actually establish much more firmly where we are, and so that we can be able to say these are the official statistics which we all agree on. And therefore, it's very difficult to say whether we are achieving these MDGs or not. If we have different sources, and some people will refer to that source and say you are not, and others will refer to another source and say you are. And that's just from an information level. That's a major challenge. Are we or are we actually not? That's one thing that we'll have to answer unequivocally this year. Secondly, with regard to a number of things that would actually relate to this matter, we have challenges that are brought about by the burden of disease that we have in the country. Suddenly, we have MDR, XDR, TB that impacts on, for example, the mother. We also have the challenges that relate to HR capacity that would therefore lead to some avoidable deaths in the maternity ward actually becoming deaths when they should have been avoidable because of HR challenges. So a whole range of things. I could actually list them. If you recall, we publish from time to time the confidential report on these matters. And we have recently established, in order to have a handle on the data question, and actually not only on data, but on the actual causes of those deaths, we have established some committees that would deal with at least sub items in relation to these areas of maternal and child care, because we have a committee that has been doing that broadly. and we announced recently in order to actually improve our handle on this matter. So there is a whole range of things that we could actually say also about that subject alone in relation to the entity. We published a document in July 2007 which actually refers to the achieving the health-related entities progress as well as challenges, and we have outlined what the challenges are in this document, which I hope the honourable members do have. So here we simply picked up that there were challenges in that area, without assumption that at least the details are there in that document. Now, including the impact of the second year medical, the community service medical intensive program, because people were going to be moving from 1 year community service to 2 year community service, to 2 year intensive. Therefore, they were not going to then going to move into community services as such. And that would mean that in many of the rural hospitals, you see, when they are doing internship, they have to be placed in particular places where the internship would work, and it tends to be largely urban. But if you move from internship to community service, then we can deploy them all over the place for community service. Now, if we're not going to get community service doctors, because the cohort that you are dealing with was now going to move into the second year of internship, which was the new regulations. That meant that year you would not have community service doctors. The flow through wasn't there. And therefore we needed to deal with that challenge. How then do we get the doctors, those that were finishing community service in those hospitals, who would have been replaced by the other, would leave the hospitals and there would be no doctors. So we had to face that challenge and actually deal with it systematically by ensuring that provinces, first and foremost, tried everything possible to keep those community doctors, service doctors, in their post, at least for this transition year. And I think in almost 70 or 80% of the cases, we're able to do that. That's what we're referring to by this particular challenge and its impact. Its impact would have been very negative if it had not been mitigated by our efforts in relation to that. Now, I will ask Dr. Pillay to comment on the TB questions, particularly the numbers and where we deploy them, etc., etc. Safe to say that again in this committee, when we're discussing and we're presenting on these issues of TB, MDR, and SDR-TB, we did say that some of the challenges we face about tracing people has nothing to do with the system per se. The systems being IT systems, etc., etc. Yes, they contribute to that. But some of it just relates to the fact that you are talking about the informalization of our households, for example. If you're talking about an informal settlement without an address, whatever system you can have, if you can't really trace the person to an address, to a house that you can say is number 50 of this particular country, then the only trace you have is a physical trace. In other words, you'd have to have a physical person who's able to link up with that person physically from time to time. But also, we have the same problem that people are moving around. Our people move from the rural areas to the urban areas, etc., etc. And so some of those challenges are actually not based on IT sophisticated systems. They are based on how we can actually mobilize communities to actually work as tracer teams. That's why in the four districts that the chair referred to, we actually established very, very firmly tracer teams that would be supporting those people, and that's why we have reduced the default rate. It's because we have actually been working physically, not with IT systems, because they work in certain contexts, but in particular with physical cases, you know. So you've got a whole range of people that are walking out there, walking door to door, tracing particular individuals. But I think Dr. Pillay will talk about that. Two more matters that I can deal with, Chair. the issue of the entity. Let's go back to saying that we appointed a committee that was going to look at this matter independently, chaired by Professor Green Thompson, consisting of people from internally here from the Department of Health, Agriculture, Science and Technology, etc., but also experts from other countries, Australia, Zimbabwe, UK, etc., etc., that have been, but also from the industry, which was also represented in that committee. Now that committee has completed its work and has submitted its policy proposal. That's why I was saying that this committee will actually this year consider the amendments to that legislation as a consequence of the recommendations that they are actually making. It's one of the legislative instruments that we are introducing this year. So in other words, somewhere in May, first we have to go for public comment. So I think it will come out early April, for beginning of April for public comment. And then somewhere mid-May, it will be tabled in Parliament. So I'm sure it will be dealt with in the second part of the year. So but to budget for the NCC currently, we have to continue, because the NCC registers medicines today. It continues to actually do work in the registration and deregistration of medicine. And it's a process we cannot stop. We dare not stop, because then we will have a serious problem there with all sorts of things. The National Health Insurance System issue. I think there are two questions to this. One is, are we at the tail end of the implementation of this? I wish I could say yes. Because I share the sentiment of the Honourable Member, it's been a hanging matter for ages. But it's actually also alluding to its complexities in relation to the challenges of the system. So the debates we continue to have with Treasury around this matter show or indicate that the challenges of how to introduce such a system within the context of a high levels of unemployment, etc., etc. And so depending on where you stand with that, you will actually say it can be introduced faster or slower. But at least what I'm encouraged by is that we are actually reaching a point where we are now finding ways of implementing it, rather than starting by saying it's not implementable in the low level of unemployment that we have in the country. Right now we are discussing how to implement it within that context. So at least that is progress. Now the Honourable Member, in the second part of the question, the Honourable Member will recall that one of the ways in which we had thought we would be phasing in the National Health Insurance would have been to say, let's start by levelling the playing field in the arena that we have anyway, which is the arena of the medical aid schemes that we have now, to ensure that we implement what we call a social health insurance system. Now, as a result of that trajectory of thinking, we took certain steps, for example, to amend the legislation, first to do a trial run of what it should look like to deal with the current environment. So the risk equalization fund concept comes from that trajectory, first and foremost, because it was actually saying that what happens currently is that the medical aid schemes actually are competing with one another for members on the basis of risk, and they do what is called risk selection. And in order to actually do away with that, we needed to introduce the risk equalization fund that would force medical aid schemes not to compete on the basis of risk, but on the basis of members and benefits. Because then if they went with the risk screening, then they would actually have to contribute to the others that were more risky through that risk equalization fund. But that fund would be the basis then for a national health fund. That would be the National Health Insurance Fund. So that was the trajectory that was that was envisaged. And when we looked at it, we thought there was nothing untoward in actually continuing with that trajectory, but now projecting a movement towards the national health insurance by ensuring that the other elements of that system are also implemented, because one of the key elements of the national health insurance system is coverage of all, including the low income earners and those that earn absolutely nothing. So if we introduce possibilities for ensuring that there's an establishment of low income medical schemes, and we also talk about how we open the government scheme, which is a discussion we're having now, the current government scheme, the GEMS, into an open government scheme for everybody, not just government servants, public servants. If we begin those processes, then we are moving towards the national health insurance system. So the amendments that we are bringing, which will address the issue apart from addressing the issues of governance of the medical aid schemes and all those other things, will address this issue of the REF, are part of a process that we are moving towards the implementation of the national health insurance. But as I say, Honourable Member, it is a difficult and complex matter in the context of unemployment that we have. Now, finally, on this 10 million rand being set aside for nursing colleges, the Honourable Member will recall that we have, let's see, 9 provinces plus Mekna. So actually, we are looking at a situation where, if you like, we have a million rand for each province to actually do a study of the nursing colleges, from infrastructure to staffing to location or to other further possibilities, etc., so that they can come up with a business plan for how nursing colleges in each of those provinces would be recapitalized. Surely a million rand is really nothing for the province of KwaZulu-Natal, where the Honourable Member comes from, to actually do that kind of study and get a quality study. It will cost more than a million rand, by the way, just for KwaZulu-Natal. Because you're talking about people who will move from Mangosi to the Wild Coast, just actually understanding what are the demands, what are the HRs, to answer Honourable Walter's questions of protection, how many colleges will you have, all those things, what is the capitalization that is going to be required. So I don't think that we should take it as lightly as saying 10 million to plan. I think that's very critical, because if we're going to spend 200 million or 400 million or even a billion or even more, as it would be possibly the case, to actually recapitalize those nursing colleges, then in fact, if you only spend 500,000 to plan for 6 billion expenditure, then the Honourable Member would have said what she said last week about the planning on the PMTCT. I think that's the issue. So let's allow for the thorough planning. If we don't spend that money that much, that's fine. But I think 10 million is in fact less than the required amount of money if I were to venture, to be able to get a comprehensive sense of what is happening in South Africa with regard to nursing colleges and recapitalization. But I mean, let's wait and see, because people will bid for it. Chair, can I ask the CFO to deal quickly with the rollover issue and then the TB issue with Dr. Philip?
Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, as regards to rollovers, last year was the last year of a comprehensive plan to refurbish and to bring our laboratories to a state-of-the-art situation. And the expenditure mentioned was part of the reactualization of that particular laboratory. And then also, we had a further 20 million, which was rolled over for the specific instruments to be used in those laboratories. the laboratories are very technical and the instruments are imported on a long delivery time, hence the rollover. The majority of the rollovers went through conditional grants. Now, you cannot roll over recurrent costs. So, the rollovers was in fact meant to fund capital costs. And the capital costs that we refer to were capital projects in terms of hospital revitalization and in terms of the forensic pathology services, where we built mortuaries in provinces, and in some cases the capital work was delayed by various technical matters. So the rollovers of the department is not just relative to the department, but also relative to the conditional grants which the department controls. Thank you. I think that we can give a much more comprehensive answer if it's required, but that gives the essence of the story.
Can I just add to that, Dr. Sherbat? See, with capital projects, you're definitely going to have rollover. Because even though you have a builder who's building at that point in time, and they are supposed to do the job and finish it in March, if they bill you beyond the 15th of March, then already you can't pay that. So you'll have to ask for a rollover, because it's already committed capital funds. That's the one thing. The other is when you are actually procuring particularly imported goods, capital goods, your computers and all those things, and the equipment that is used in hospitals, and what you then find is that the turnaround time for that particular machine to reach the hospital and for you to pay is actually longer than the financial year in some instances. So you'll ask for a rollover. That's why there's a continued debate in government about whether you can actually budget annually for capital projects, because then you'll always have rollovers in that way, depending on the start and finish. So that's what happens. But also, just as an illustration, two weeks ago, we wrote a letter to a couple of provinces to say we're not going to actually give you this money, transfer it to you, because we don't see expenditure. It's very slow, which is what we're supposed to do according to the job. We have responses from them saying those funds are committed, but we still have a problem with the public works billing, and so we haven't been able to pay, and therefore there is no expenditure. And on the basis of that, you cannot really withhold those funds. From what we see, if we transfer those funds, there is a rollover already. And then we look at what is the option, the best option for that rollover. If we keep it here, there is a faster process of rolling over, because we are dealing with a few departments. If you transfer it to the province, then they'll take ages to roll over. And in fact, we might find that we lose the conditionality of that money. So that's why we tend to keep it and ask for rollover, so that we have a 400 million rollover on our own budget, when in fact it's for the sake of a particular province. It's not ours in that kind of sense.
My take as well is the time. A number of members want to ask questions. Some wanted a follow-up question. We still have another presentation to make. There was a view from the district there that some of the issues we need to deal with when we deal with the annual report, but not late in the year, or we can have a continuation of the discussion. I will need to advise another member in terms of how we deal with it.
Well, Chair, my view is it's an important process, and we should interrogate the documents a lot more. To allow for more debate. I really do think so.
Mm-hmm.
that on its own chair, I should think we need to propose a continuation of this kind of a presentation, maybe for some time and next possible. But the other thing, Chair, that I would want to ask is how important is the second part of the whole thing today? Because I should think the matter maybe that we are left with right now is 8 of the commission, and of which I don't think for now. But in any case, let me leave it there. But I would want us to have maybe a continuation of this issue. And let me leave it there.
I think we all agree it's an important debate. But the thing about it is this one, we need to engage on the control
what I must say that there are a number of questions and that I know this is an important discussion that we must all engage in.
Additional grant has now been increased. The DG, Mr. Moza, they know the problems around the personal grant and the provinces last year. Provinces were not spending and diverting and the draw-up and violations. Also made comments around that came to us around this particular thing. So there are lots of things, I'm sure. In one slide here, you say the facilitated the establishment of local engineering traditional health, traditional health practitioner consultants. Last year, you said it was established. When we look at your notes, it's been established, it's already there, we say it must be participated. There are a number of questions that what has mandatory DG of next coping advice to us? Some will be in the annual report, of course, of the way material is, and maybe we'll have to facilitate challenge to this. Maybe we'll be tied to the office of the maybe next week or whatever it is. But I don't have involvement.
K-person, how urgent is it that we deal with the tobacco thing today? I suggest we defer to next week, because public hearings are only the problem. I'm suggesting that we defer the presentation on the tobacco amendment bill to next week, given that public hearings are the following week, and that we finish this because we are in the mode of this right now. That rather we close this properly, you know, and not kind of, you know, to incentivize to take the presentation on the tobacco bill.
Let's
She knows better, I think, on how to call and all the speakers around this room. We have a tight program, am I right, for the year.
Thank you. educatingly. We have to take the briefing today on the problem and take all that I
hear.
No, 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 protesting. She was not helping me.
No, thank you, Che. Che, my own sense with regards to the first of all with regards to the tobacco bill is that the bill was tabled in Parliament. So I would like to start there. So it's already a parliamentary process, and we are rebriefing on the 76th part of that bill because it was split. It was split by Parliament and we had briefed before and was rebriefing on that bill, which is already a parliamentary process. If the public hearings are the following week, then I don't think it interferes with the program to actually defer it to next week. But at the same time, it might actually help because even now, I mean, you have 30 minutes more. All the questions that are supposed to be raised about this discussion. That's the ones on conditional grounds. So I'm not sure if in any case we're going to finish this one, even if we defer the bill too. I don't think you'll finish this one in any case, whether you defer it or not. So it might help to, given that kind of context, to rather defer this discussion and perhaps just for the sake of the members, take the overview of the bill now for 15 minutes and we close. Because then next week you can prepare for both further questions on the bill and the further engagement on this matter. That would be my view. Because it gives members even enough time to engage with the stakeholders about whatever should have been presented here and ask more relevant questions. And the stakeholders to engage with the members, because they do want to engage with the members. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, that's the response to the question. Yeah? Yeah, I know.
If we do deal with the tobacco bill now, or the amendments, I mean, it's as easy as assuming there's no question. I mean, how short is the actual presentation? If we're going to start with this, we have to interrogate. And this is the problem when we try, and I understand because of the short number of working days, the shift, the tough schedule that ends up, and this is the problem when we cram too much into one day. Or that we start at 10, we should start maybe start at 9 in the morning.
Yeah.
You know,
Can we therefore suspend the discussion now? I get your point, because it's already upwards. And we evaluate ourselves on the tobacco product fee. We can reschedule ourselves for a more in-depth time to look into the inputs of the DG. Mm-hmm. Can I please, the honored member?
So we just have
a
briefing, no questions. That's what
you said. The monthly question was, I was conferring with the parliamentary on something that has been put on my table now. The weak question.
Jim, I have a second. So, if we do defer the deliberations on the strategic plan, will the DG undertake to bring the figures of all the vacancies for next week?
Perfect.
Try.
I will bring you what is there. We'll bring you what is there.
Okay. So everyone's heard, eh?
At that page.
Okay, that's
Just suspend the discussion now. All the questions, please, for that member.
You must know the questions and you've got enough time to look further on the issues. And then I will invite you to the week or so to engage with this one. We now come to Mr. Bako. Thank you very much, thank you for your attention. Let's come to this one.
Can I start? Given the time. Say that again? Which one?
Which election?
No, which city? What city? No, this one is already a parliamentary issue. It's not our issue. Why are you making it our issue?
What do
you mean it didn't miss it? It's already... Can I explain something to you? This is my introduction. This is a matter of parliament. Please don't involve us in that. We are not introducing a bill again. It was introduced. Yeah. I don't know. This is not the subject that I know. What's that? But what we are saying is that's not our problem. It's a parliamentary problem. This is 2008. Yeah, 29%. Yeah, good time. So which one are you looking for? The saving the mother? The committee. Okay.
And they come from basically the same committee. That's confidential and parallel. Yeah, it's done by the same committee. So they look at five areas. Yeah.
We have to move a bit back. All the introduction stuff we must go. And I just particularly just deal with the minister of the topic here. The introduction, then what? I know this thing. Oh, you want me to do it? By way of introduction, I'd like to actually put certain issues on record so that they are understood, because I think that there may be attempts at creating some confusion on this matter. The chair will recall, and the honourable members, that we last year submitted a bill on tobacco, and that the parliamentary process, the state law advisors and parliament agreed that the bill had to be split into two. And therefore parliament took a process to do that and produce two bills. The Section 75 bill and the Section 76 bill. And therefore, the processes that have to take place prior to the submission to Parliament of any bill had already been undertaken. All that Parliament did was to take certain clauses that were in that bill and separate them from other clauses. Therefore, the text in front of you that was tabled has not been amended or touched in any manner by the Department of Health after that initial submission. It is simply a separation of the text that had been to public comment. As simple as that. Therefore, any suggestion that there is a process that should have taken place before then is actually completely wrong. Therefore, Chair, I'm also trying to assist the Honourable Member about the submission date. On the 27th of February, the Minister of Health reminded Parliament that this process needed to be fast-tracked. And that was before the 29th of February. And then Parliament published this bill on the 29th of February, as indicated here. So it was before the 29th. Even that was before the 29th. So, Chair, what we are really representing is what we had presented at the time that was decided to be split into two bills. Now, I've asked my colleague, who is a new colleague that has joined the department, as Chief Director of Primary Health Care, to present, by way of initiation, this bill. To the committee. What we'll do, Chair, because of time, is we'll skip the introductory stuff, which we already know, and we'll start on slide number 6, which will be just on the bill itself, the purpose of the bill, etc., etc. And he will try to be as fast as possible, just to allude to what amendments are being made to the principal bill that was actually introduced before. Thank you, Chair.
Let's break it for now, Honourable Member, but there's what we call in our cycle, right? Informal briefing.
Yeah.
And then the Honourable Member was saying we will then have the formal briefing. Okay, we'll get into it. Because the Honourable Member will have questions. Okay? Because if you look into the memorandum, it introduces the 2018, and then it says consultation, the Department of Health consulted, and then it mentioned the student under consultation. And then it says it must be dealt with in accordance with the official discussion for technical assistance within our constitution. What therefore the chair is saying here is that even though, and we had a very long debate, in fact, there were a number of us in the committee were actually arguing about the accessibility of the separation. In fact, even in the meeting with the deputy president and the minister of health and the GDG, when other departments wanted to speak, it was advised that it is not wise to separate the people. That's why you say that in almost all other things now, we don't answer that, but it creates its own severe complications. And and we are working in terms of the time schedule that has been. There was a letter that was sent to me and I'm sure we have to give you copies, but I've given it to the parliamentary advisor who made everyone use about it. It may not be an agreement with what you're making about this particular issue. But again, I want us to avoid that now if you can advise the honorable member and allow this particular process. They also have their own time to understand the issues. We have our time to look at. We can ask questions of your applications, etc. We'll have to come back to this particular issue. Well, one of the things that we've been very diligent at this particular committee on, we don't change on us. And then you see that the chair always insists whether whoever will say fast-track the bill. For me, my fast-tracking is to ensure that I comply with all the two processes that are there, so that we don't fall into certain problems that confronted us with the termination of present legislation, where it was actually challenged, not because of our work as a portfolio committee, challenged because of another work of another house also. And then it had to come back to us again. In fact, even then, I put my own view that as far as the committee, we did our work diligently in an efficient program procedure as well. And, but because now there was a particular continual court review about this issue, we had to deal with that thing, and I think all of our members, I think we know the process. We don't want to make the committee session, we'll give the details, the scope of the plan, just trying to find it. Or we'll make copies, I think, to show Mr. Khaja, so that you yourselves can actually understand the issues that are being raised. And we're going to engage on our own understanding around some of the issues. I for now, I think, just allow this particular presentation to take place. We'll then interrogate all those processes and agree ourselves what exactly do we understand by stakeholder consultation, parliamentary consultation, what the rules are. Will you allow me the process number, though? Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Can you have the presentation?
So thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. As the DGS says, we will just go straight into the content of the bill. That it merely sought to amend the Tobacco Product Control Act of 1993. And as it was presented during the strategic planning presentation, that we need to comply with the World Health Organization Framework Conventions on Tobacco Control Treaty Obligations, and also to close the loopholes that existed in the Act and to strengthen the Act towards to better protect and promote public health. It will also seek to amend the certain definitions and add new ones to the Act, and also to strengthen the sections that prohibit advertising, promotion and sponsorship, and also go to the extent of providing for better labeling of tobacco products. It will set the same product standards for both the manufacturers and importers of tobacco products, prohibit sales to and by those people under the age of 18 years, and extend the provision prohibiting the free distribution of tobacco products, and then restrict the location of vending machines. It will also empower the minister to make regulations regarding the health information to be displayed on the packages, and also regarding the notices that may be displayed at the point of sale, and also display of tobacco products at the point of sale, including quantities that must be contained in the packages. And it will also set penalties for contravention of all those. The second three of the bill deals with advertising, promotion and sponsorship. The 1999 Amendment Act banned tobacco advertising and promotion. and as a result of that, it helped reduce smoking among children, because there was a 17% decrease in the number of the 13 to 16 year olds who had never taken up a smoke before, between the year 1999 and 2002. And the slide here just shows how those percentages moved on. In 1999, we were at 53%, now 2002, it then increased. So therefore, this still seeks to even keep it even higher. Around the advertising and promotion, the industry found new ways of targeting children, and the advertising was available in the internet, through SMSs, through viral marketing, to reach teenagers, and also that the very luxurious things in terms of social activities would be targeted, such as your clubs, your campuses, your bars, and so that people that frequent there, if you know that these are teenagers, and therefore they'll be hooked if they go there. And in that also, that the events that were supposed to be for smokers would obviously even be that for non-smokers are then interested in going there so that they can buy cigarettes and also that, you know, they get themselves associated with those events. Promotional activities also involve financial contributions to individuals, groups and organizations, such as scholarships and bursaries, and then such donations. We find that are not necessarily for charity, but are designed to create a positive business environment for the industry. I'm going to run through this because advertising promotion again, you know, the content there are almost the same. But just before I skip on this one, just to say around the advertising, the bill proposes to prohibit advertising with the aim and with the effect and likely effect of promoting the sale of tobacco products. And the difficulty obviously is to prove what advertisers' intentions are, but it is easier to show, you know, what the effects of the adverts are in the end. And I think here, honorable members, is also again just covering on those areas of promotion and sponsorship and advertising. The manufacturers and importers of tobacco products will only be able to, if they've got to make charitable donations, do it anonymously, without necessarily, you know, reflecting that it is them that did it. And the proposal, therefore, is that there shouldn't be manufacturers that then make misleading terms like light or mild or low on tar and nicotine and stuff. Because if you do that, many smokers then believe that, you know, if you say light, perhaps light is less dangerous, light is smart, and therefore our argument is that, and this bill contains that as well, it's not true that light and mild are therefore less dangerous to people, but they are in the same way causing cancer and other diseases like your regular smoking would do. On the restriction and place of sale, the sale of tobacco products in the health and education institutions has to be prohibited. The reasoning is that you can't have a hospital that will say, but you know, we can't sell beer, but then accept to have a vending machine that will sell tobacco. And alcohol is not sold in technicals as well as a rule, so therefore you can't have a vending machine that sells tobacco. So that's what the bill seeks to do. The display of tobacco products at retail outlets has to be regulated, and the reason is that the retail displays are more important vehicles of promotion for tobacco manufacturers, and the bill also seeks to say what the Japan Tobacco International did to British American Tobacco, you know, by refusing to be bribed to hide the GTI brand, you know, Japan Tobacco Industry brand under the counter. And for that, British American Tobacco had to pay 100,000 rand to sell this brand exclusively. So we take a cue from that. And self-service display leads to increased stealing, particularly by youth. Now, around the packaging and size limitation, the proposal is that the minister shall be able to prescribe minimum package sizes. And the rationale is that The smokers who buy single cigarettes do not receive health warnings. And your loose cigarettes make cigarettes more affordable to children. So therefore, they should be available in pack. The standard for manufacturers, importers, and exporters. The proposal is that to make the standards that apply to manufacturers of tobacco products under the 2007 Act also apply to the importers. Section 4 deals with the sales to minors. The proposal in this section is to raise the minimum age for the legal sale of tobacco products to 18 years, so that it can only be sold to and by those that are over 18 years of age. The reason here is that the tobacco industry itself recommended that this age restriction be raised from 16 to 18 years. And the Premier Convention requires that the youth should not be allowed to sell tobacco. And section 4 deals with the internet again and postal sales. The proposal is that the sale of cigarettes through post, internet, or electronic media should be prohibited. Because such sales are difficult to monitor and promoting evasion of excess tax duty payments. Section 4A, the free distribution, neither the manufacturers nor their agents may distribute tobacco products for free. And no person shall offer gifts or invite people to participate in sporting, cultural, social, or sporting events contingent on the purchase of a tobacco product or for being a smoker. The reason is that there's a need to stop the practice of promoting tobacco by inviting smokers to parties, nightclubs, and other events. Section 5 deals with the vending machine. I mentioned it earlier. The proposal is that the location of this machine has to be restricted to designated smoking areas. And that the sale of non-tobacco products, just like your soft drinks, your chocolate, from the vending machines that are used for tobacco sales, should be prohibited. And the reason is that these are the steps that are aimed at reducing purchases by minors. The Tobacco Vending Association made a recommendation on the location of vending machines. Section 6 on the regulations is that the health warnings on tobacco packaging may include pictures and machines that help identify an illicit product. The reason here is that it will help people to better understand the risk of tobacco use. It will be particularly useful to those who cannot read. The current health warnings are 12 years old and it's become a commonplace. Now, these are just the attachment of how the packages look like, and so we will indeed include it for those of us that can read Spanish and so they sound. So these are just the pictures and again showing what the two kind of livers, you know, one with and another one without smoke. And this one for an unborn baby. So section 7, it deals with offenses and penalties, and it therefore introduces the penalties as they are. An individual who contravenes section 2, 5, and all those other related sections will have to pay up to 100,000 rand, and an individual who contravenes the related section so here below will have to pay up to 1 million rand. So this is the end of the summary presentation, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So just a clarity question, and then next week I'll pose other questions, obviously. Just to do with the consultation process, could you I see that there's no anti-smoking lobby group mentioned in the consultation process. You've got British American Tobacco, all the departments, and then the tobacco industry to say. So it's a lot. It's page 8 of the amendment.
Okay.
So I just want to know if you consulted, if I'm, I don't know how to say it, the anti-smoking group at all. And as far as the tobacco companies are concerned, what kind of consultation took place with them? How extensive was it? Thank you.
So, President, on page 12 of the presentation, the reflection for the bill, internet and postal service, I just want to know, because when you look at the page 8 of the proposed amendment bill, the page 8 of the proposed is under consultation again. I just want to know, because it has been proposed that the sale of cigarettes through post, internet, or electronic media is prohibited. I just want to know as well the relevant department has been consulted with the police and post telecommunications.
The reason given over there is difficult to monitor and promote, sales are difficult to monitor and promote evasion of excise tax duty payments. Now this is a trade and industry function, not a health function. So I would like clarity on that issue.
I think
the payable
question. Given your comment on the letters and the issues that are involved, I'm reluctant to comment on the consultation issue. Because we would have to deal with them in the context of that matter that is on the table, not in an informal fashion. The one that the chair suggested, the reason why he's suggesting whatever. So I'm reluctant to actually go into detail about the consultations and that. I would want to go into that detail in response to that formal process and such. On the second question, unless the chair feels otherwise, I would actually not want to engage in that discussion at the moment, because it's actually part of the discussion that is on the table that is making the chair rule that we actually deal with this thing informally until there is advisement on all sides. So
point of order, Chairperson. Point of order? May I raise a point of order? The DG is referring to an issue that's on the table. I am a member of this committee. I don't know what issue he's referring to. You obviously got some communication that he's aware of, but we're not. Would you like to share that with us, please?
What I want to suggest with circulating this letter was just came on my table yet. As I was saying, there was even an advice around that thing. But I'm just, let me give an opportunity and circulate the letter so that when we deal with the formal process next week,
I'm not going to be.
I'm much more comfortable, sir, because you see, the reason I don't want to answer this question is we are talking legal matter, and I don't want any reference to any legal thing in this conversation. I'll have to deal with this thing also legally, because it's a legal question that we're asking.
Thank you very much.
I'm not